Blog Talk Radio.
This is Janessa Hoffman, and strangely enough, I was going to start out with a Bible verse in Hezekiah, which appeared in my open study Bible, my recovery Bible, but is not online. So apparently it's in some versions, and it's not. It's about the King Hezekiah of the Old Testament. And all I found was a cross reference from 1 Corinthians. So apparently it's not in there. I'm just going to read one passage, though. I can. Oh, Lord. I don't know. I'm not going to do that. Well, tonight's topic is about if your personal salvation was enough to turn around massively. Let's say you had like a bone-chilling providence happen within you, that you had a vision to help others, change the world, change the course of the United States military, or even just help five neighbors who you didn't help yesterday, and there was a revival across the land. Would that be enough to change the future prediction of America? Because the executive branch of the United States plus the legislative branch have morphed themselves into individual testing grounds of, I would say, self-serving attitudes, to the point where we're not really collectively working together anymore for the good of America, now that the lobbyists have taken advantage of us and impressed their own needs upon the congressional body, and the executive branch is not in sync or cooperation with them. But even if it was done at a government level or not, do we have the capability of changing the world? I think this is a question too big for myself, so I'm bringing John and Don in. Hi, Don and John.
Hello, good Sunday. Good Sunday evening.
We only have John for 45 minutes. Apparently he has some kind of engagement.
Okay.
So I have a question for you. I have a question for you guys. Well, first of all, I think I might have found the answer. I thought there was a book in the Bible named Hezekiah, but there wasn't. It's in 2 Kings, where they just talk about him.
So Hezekiah is a person or a king?
He's a king in the book of 2 Kings. So, and I'm going to read a verse out of Hezekiah, a couple verses. In those days, Hezekiah became sick and was at the point of death. And Isaiah the prophet, the son of Amos, came to him and said, "Thus says the Lord, set your house in order, for you shall die, you shall not recover." Then Hezekiah turned his face to the wall and prayed to the Lord, saying, "Remember now, O Lord, I beseech thee, how I have walked before thee in faithfulness and with a whole heart, and have done what is good in thy sight." And Hezekiah wept bitterly. And before Isaiah had gone out of the middle court, the word of the Lord came to him, "Turn back and say to Hezekiah, the prince of the people, thus says the Lord, the God of David your father, I have heard your prayer, I have seen your tears, behold, I will heal you. On the third day you shall go up to the house of the Lord, and I will add 15 years to your life. I will deliver you and this city out of the hand of the king of Assyria, and I will defend the city for my own sake and for David's sake." And Isaiah said, "Bring a cake of figs, and let them take, and lay it down, lay it on the boil, that he may recover." And Hezekiah said to Isaiah, "What shall be the sign that the Lord will heal me, and that I shall go up to the house of the Lord on the third day?" And Isaiah said, "This is the sign to you from the Lord, that the Lord will do the things that he promised. Shall the shadow go forward 10 steps or go back 10 steps? And Hezekiah answered, it's an easy thing for the shadow to lengthen 10 steps rather than the shadow to go back 10 steps. And Isaiah the prophet cried to the Lord and brought the shadow back 10 steps, by which the sun declined on the dial of Ahaz. So John and I were talking earlier today. My main proposal for this show is collectively the U.S., even if each person had a mission to exalt their neighbor and serve the community, would it be enough to change the course of human history? Is technology and ulterior motive so far out of hand that our individual commitment for a clean environment, the goodwill of all men, salvaging each person, is that going to be what's going to ultimately rectify our broken systems in this country? We have split objectives on all levels of our nation, and it, from what I can see in my mirror ball, it's not happening fast enough.
Well, who would like to tackle that first?
Well, all I know is that we are going 10 steps backward. The shadow is going 10 steps backward. And that's only because, we're in the backward stage. I'm not familiar with the passage you just read, but the sun setting on Ahab may be the next sign. We may not be able to get it back because there's far too much greed, far too much. You mentioned the military presence, the military pharmaceutical complex is immense. It's got everyone hooked on drugs. The military soldiers, the general citizenry. I'm afraid, as I mentioned a couple weeks ago, I'm almost afraid to drive anymore just because, and I'm not afraid of much anything, but that's because there's so many other people on pharmaceuticals, legal drugs. And that's, you know, we're going backwards. We're in
you know,
mode.
I just caught a small clip at work today of Governor of Rhode Island, Lincoln Chafee, who just joined the race 3 days ago. He's the U.S. Senator from Rhode Island. He was a man of peace, and his mantra for the 2016 election is peace. And he spoke on CNN yesterday and today, and he made so much sense that I couldn't even comprehend the fact that someone with this much sense, how much airtime is someone who's going to be a man of peace? Are we really going to get someone like this, a man of peace, a man who can resolve this nation?
Oh, yes. He's called the beast, actually the Antichrist. But I'll tell you something. We talked a little earlier today.
Lincoln Chafee is the beast?
No,
no.
No,
he's
saying he's a man of peace. Yes, there is. A fake kind of peace. But we talked earlier today, Jane, and one thing I mentioned, it's not as bad as you think it is. It's worse. But I think the answer to your question is yes and no. Human nature is pretty consistent. So since the beginning of time, we've always had evil on the planet, and we've always had homeless. We've always had problems, murder. The first kids that were born, you know, one of them killed his brother. So that's pretty much human behavior. But I do believe that one person can make a difference. Michael Jackson told me that we can heal the world and make it a better place and look at the man in the mirror. I actually think certain people in particular times in right position, Martin Luther King, it could be a Reagan, it could be Abraham Lincoln, you can make a difference, good or bad. I remember one time I got on the Metro bus and a homeless guy got in around, the beginning of the ride. And he hadn't taken a shower probably in a couple of years, it seemed like. He reeked. I mean, reeked more than any human I've ever known. And when he sat down in the about four aisles, four seats back, everyone in the first four rows got up, and stop by stop, they all moved to the back of the bus. And I tapped someone on the shoulder. I was sitting behind him a couple seats. I said, you know, it is true. One man can make a difference.
That's good.
And I think that's kind of the deal. You know, sometimes it's easy to be jaded and to be to give up and to lose hope. But there are particular actions that change history. You know, whether you're the first man on the moon, whether you're the guy dropping a bomb on Nagasaki or Hiroshima. There's all kinds of historic moments out there for us. I think we shouldn't give up.
Yeah, do you guys mind if I just play like this 1 minute clip of Lincoln Chafee? Not because he's profound, but he has his priorities in the right spot. Then we can have a lively conversation until John has to leave in 40 minutes. 1 second.
To wage peace, as you call it. Right now, as we speak, President Obama is in Europe at the G7 summit, and he's calling for an extension of sanctions against Russia. Would you support that?
Well, it's unfortunate what's happened in Ukraine, in Crimea, and with Putin, with Vladimir Putin. At one time, we were really working well together. And it's deteriorated, and I don't know about these sanctions. I should think there would be better ways of getting a rapprochement with Russia. They're so important in the world, and especially to the countries, the former Soviet republics such as Ukraine.
Okay, so if you're in the Oval Office, you're president, what is that better way? How would you correct relations with Russia and Vladimir Putin right now?
Well, stop making the mistakes that Secretary Clinton made. That was a big mistake when we were trying to restart our relationship with Russia, and Secretary Clinton presented the foreign minister with a symbolic gesture, and they got the Russian word wrong. And it's those types of mistakes that set back our relationship, little symbolic mistakes.
Okay, it's cutting off. Anyways, he wants to bring Edward Snowden back. He wants to... He said there's only three countries in the world who are still measuring by yards and not metric. It's us, Liberia, and Miramar. And there's all these other global initiatives he has to make the world a better place. And I think with the nature of this 2016 election, people seem pretty upbeat about fighting the powers that be and crushing down the status quo. Any comments?
Oh, by the way, Jane, did you do anything different with the feed as far as the sound? Because I have to say the quality was on my end was very good. I could hear everything. A lot of times when we play clips, it's kind of muddled and I don't have clarity on it.
I have a better speaker at my house than I do at work, and Chance Raspberry songs the other night didn't come off so good. So I just tried... Sometimes you can embed the music when it's a music, but when it's a CNN or YouTube video, I don't try to embed it. I can't.
Good.
Don, are you still with us?
Sure.
Okay, what I'm trying to say is, okay, I'm looking at Wikipedia. There's at least four people running on the Democratic sides, and three of them are unknown. And there's at least eight people running on the Republican side, and about five are not nationally known. So what do you all think of this? Is this a do you think, you know, it's kind of like the end of the Obama era. It's an open field, and Obama cleared the way for anybody to run in the sense that, he came from a single-parent family in Hawaii, in which his grandparents raised him. So not just the demographics, but, I mean, people are Governor Martin O'Malley in Maryland, Senator Jim Webb from Virginia, possibly Joe Biden is going to be running. I'm not sure. That could maybe throw a monkey wrench in Hillary's plans. But I'm just saying it seems people are enthusiastic.
Well, that's good. Yeah, I think because maybe it's without the president running again. Obviously, it opens up new possibilities. I think Hillary, though, has kind of got it. I think they want to see the first half-black man in the White House as the first, I guess he'd be the first man. Because, I mean, really, Bill Clinton was our first mixed president, and then Obama was kind of second. So that's a joke, of course. So I think it's Hillary. I really do.
You know, I'm not going to predict because anything could happen. Go ahead, Don.
No, anything can happen. I've been contacted by the Hillary campaign already, and I declined for a non-paid position. Well, that's because I want to wait and see what these lawsuits are going to come about. She very well could have a Benghazi lawsuit, email lawsuit, Supreme Court getting in that, and the Hillary Gate still down there. You know, we've got quite a few blemishes that
you know,
Donna,
if it would have happened already, wouldn't it have?
No. These are things that take time. Excuse me. The emails have yet to be completed.
I just have a feeling that they're going to take the big magic marker eraser and just wipe it off the board. I could be wrong. You know, it's kind of like Obama's birth certificate. I still don't know if they really ever got the real McCoy. And it's kind of like no one cares enough, you know.
They got the long version. He printed it after Donald Trump bullied him.
Yeah, right. And it was beautiful, clear, and it was no typos. It was not a normal birth certificate. But see, what we're talking about is exactly what the problem is, Jane, is that there are so many crooks that go indicted. We've got no one virtually indicted in one of what I see as one of the biggest scams in the history of the financial system is with the LIBOR. And you've got RBS and Morgan's Chase, J.P. Morgan, Chase. You've got Citi involved. You've got, oh, gosh, four or five other banks that are involved. This is one of, that no one's been indicted yet. No person. No one has been.
You know what? We had a compound in the middle of the Middle East. Four people died in a hostile territory, and the Republicans are just using it to make an excuse. You know, they're just looking for something to peg on Hillary.
Well, Anderson didn't want the help. They had asked him three or four times if he needed backup, and he refused. So he put himself in a position where he was on his own, and all we could, you know, the president was probably sitting in his Oval Office or in the war room looking at what was going down, and there was nothing he could do about it. So it was, you know, there's things in Benghazi that we haven't been told straight, and but, you know, for weapons of mass destruction and all that stuff, the Republicans are just, and you know, I don't mean to denigrate them,
go ahead.
Whether they need it or not, but for the most part, there is very little substance in what they say at all. I'm a lobbyist, citizen lobbyist, unpaid myself, so I see this firsthand. And any time they open their mouths, they have nothing, no facts, no evidence, nothing to back them up. They're just going by, as I mentioned, the Stepford Wives syndrome, where they're robotic and march to the voice in the sky. And it's pretty much like that.
And even if there are facts, who's giving the facts? How was it put together? What was their motivation? It's, I mean, I know at work, if there's a problem and it's my fault, I'm not going to necessarily paint the picture that I screw it up. In fact, it's interesting with a customer. This is very interesting. it doesn't matter what happens. I mean, really, it doesn't matter what happens. It's just the reason why. Like, example, if you ordered something Friday and I forgot to order it, and Monday, if I called you and said, you know, I forgot to key your order, or I missed it in the rush of things, I'm dead meat. Now, if I call you and say, oh, it's on back order, they were sold out locally, I tried to get it everywhere, we'll send it no extra freight, but it'll come in Tuesday morning, they're usually going to give me a pass. Or, you know, the truck broke down, or the whatever. And I'm just saying with these, you know, Benghazi or any of these situations, people just paint the picture that sounds reasonable to get them out of, you know, criticism, and they'll slide by most of the time. Especially if everyone is lined up.
Think of the whole of this
the
country
problem.
In
there you
of...
go, Jane. There's your problem again. You know, lying, cheating, stealing, those are things that are commonplace, and they're taught by our leadership. Public goes out and does it, and then they get caught. And the percentage-wise, the penalties are way more stringent than, let's say, anyone else who the power or money. That's your problem. We
all right, let's talk about, we have a 60-minute show. It could go into 2 hours, but you guys are wasting 10 minutes on Benghazi. We can't bring those dead people back, and there's no point in crucifying anyone in the public. You know, maybe Hillary shouldn't have run. Screw this country. Screw them all.
I think
well,
she'll be
Hillary,
fine.
You got to understand two things. One, that the Clintons, along with the governor who's running, who you just mentioned,
O'Malley?
Anyway, O'Malley, thank you. They have put through some of the most stringent
legislation.
Policing and jailing legislation of almost anybody there is. They're virtually neoliberals. They're just taking the stand of whatever is popular, and of course.
Name one piece of legislation. I'm going to look it up while you're talking.
Well, for O'Malley, it's in his state, so I'm not familiar with all of his state. I'm just familiar with the
okay,
general.
Okay, Bill Clinton admitted that Bill Clinton. Admitted that he set the tone, according to this website, that he set the tone for tough guy crime.
Exactly, and that is just a part of his record. And the Democrats in my state here in Nevada, they are gung-ho on making sure there are very strong legislation on of criminal offenders. The criminal offenders.
When Clinton took office in 92, there were 847,000 people in prison. By the time he left in 2000, it had grown to 1,334 million.
Right. So there you go. The Clintons, that's one of the reasons I'm not gung-ho on Hillary. I mean, I know that black African-American brothers and sisters and those who are of other faiths and colors are going to be in danger if the Clintons maintain their legislative ways.
Okay, I want to throw something at you. Are blacks and Latinos better under a potential Hillary Clinton presidency or Marco Rubio or a Jeb Bush?
It depends on which blacks and Latinos you're talking about. They're talking, reforming the Social Security system. He'll have an opportunity to do that, which doesn't need to be reformed. We do need to work on Medicare and Medicaid, but not very much. Those are still self-sustaining. We just need to stop taking the monies, the extra monies from them, just like we do the post office, U.S. Post Office. Any profits or anything that is extra can be incandescently at best taken to put in their coffers where they need it. And so these are things that need to be stopped so that those organizations can remain standalone. Instead, they're getting all kinds of interference with their jobs. And
John isn't going to be on the show long tonight, John, what do you have to say about the last few minutes?
I think we need poor people, and we need people to be exploited on the planet. I was talking to someone about, you go to these seminars and you see things, motivational speakers, and they talk about everyone can be successful. You can be successful. But to have a champion or a king or a leader or a dictator, you need losers. You need people that are last. Someone has to be last place. You know, it's like, just like we have to have someone in first, not everyone could be in first place. If everyone was a king, who's going to serve the king? He wouldn't be a king anymore, or a queen. So I see it that we do need to, unfortunately, exploit people, someone, somewhere, somehow. And it's just a matter of how many and how bad. Hopefully,
why do we have to exploit someone? Just to suppress them?
Well, let's take the nice TV set that we look at, or the nice, a car. Where is it made? Is it made here? You know, it's probably the parts came from China or was assembled in China. Are those workers working in great conditions? You know, have you seen the smog over there? Do they care about EPA standards? No way. You know, it's almost like a black fog in those cities. And they don't care if they lose, half a billion people to, cancers and things like that. They got plenty of people. They'll just have some more. So, yeah, I do see at some point historically, whether it's slave labor, whether it's made in Hong Kong or made in Indonesia or made in Mexico, what about in our country? You know, no matter what we say, you go to a rich person's house, probably has a Mexican gardener, probably has a Mexican babysitter, probably has, if they worked on the house, probably some Mexican worker, you know. And if they work hard and fast, I'm not saying that's 100%, but it rings pretty true.
Yeah.
Hard and fast with poor quality. That's not my cup of tea. I'd rather have quality than quality.
I will say, of course, it varies from place to place. Like here in L.A., my pastor, who's very white, is a McCulty, so I guess he'd be probably Irish or Scottish or something like that. He does a lot of work. He likes to build things. And one day, one of his friends, who was a contractor, needed some help for the day, so he worked out there with the Mexican workers. He says, I just couldn't keep up with them. I barely, I was like, these guys were hustling and they were really good. But, yeah, you're right. You tend to, when you get cheap labor, you get cheap quality work. The quality level of things made in China, well, we've heard stories about that, right?
Yeah. Well.
So, go ahead, James.
I kind of lost my train of thought for a minute.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm
Braille.
Yeah, no, I mean, because this is such a broad subject. What you just said, John, is it's the reality of it all. There is a need. Even Keynesian economics says that for the most part, the United States has to have a talent pool of, I believe, 3.6%. I'm not sure unemployment, so that we can have people that we can fall back upon if need be. So, right now we need to revamp our cities and make sure that this broad expansion doesn't continue, since we already have the infrastructure there, and that'll help climate change considerably. This rolling expansion is just too much.
I think our fundamentals, the principal concepts that we're working with as a country have just slipped and it's gone bad. I think people aren't we're not creating new products and being competitive in the marketplace. We just feel like let's print some more money, and people are using the petrodollar, so we'll just inflate things and write off our losses that way. And it's not like it used to be. I made kind of the example that if you had money problems and you said, you know, here's what we're going to do. I'm going to give an allowance to the kids. They'll paint the house. And then the money that I give them, they'll give it to their younger brother and sister to mow the lawn, and then they'll give it to someone else and so forth. Well, we're creating more government jobs. We're creating more jobs of working maybe on roads and infrastructure, but we're not coming up, we're not solving the problem. If your family has money problems, you've got to be able to barter and have a competitive job. Like if you have apples, you trade them for oranges. But just to keep giving money inside the house to people to do redundant chores that aren't, they don't create services or products that you can exchange, then we're basically just creating weapons and entertainment and video games, which is fine, but we need a little more. Oh, go ahead.
You forgot the drugs.
Oh, and the drugs, yes, the drugs. We got to have the... What was
you gotta
I thinking?
Have the drugs. You got to have the legal drugs. That's what keeps everybody.
If they were illegal before, let's make them legal like pot. We'll just give it a medical reason, and now everyone can take it, you know.
So what are our to make the – I don't want to say make the world a better place, but to prune the tree – it's not just about who the best president will be, but what has to happen in the next 5 years for our nation to come together? What are our first three priorities?
The first thing, I think we need to make sure that Lolo is gainfully employed, which he is, and that he graduates, which he's accomplishing. And, I mean, these are the future of our country. I think, like with Don, he's a grandparent and a father. I think he sets an example, and I think he made moves in his life. He moved out of area. He tried to basically instill certain values and create an environment for his children to have a chance at a successful life, a healthy life. And I think people need to do that piece by piece. And I think it's by example. You know, you can talk about it, but you have to live it. And, it didn't happen overnight.
So why'd you pick my family? Why don't you pick another random family?
Well, I mean, I give yours as a good example. Lolo is working. He's doing well in school. You're working two jobs. You're being responsible. You have your radio blog show. You write for the papers. You know, you're leading by example. I think it's awesome.
I'm also about ready to crash and burn. Now, Don is in the golden era of his life. He's made it through his 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s. How old are you now?
I've got two
57?
More weeks, and I'll be 60 in two more weeks.
Good God.
Congratulations.
So
nobody...
You're doing more meaningful work than you were doing 10 years ago.
It depends on meaningful. That's what I always mention, is that things are always relative. When you mention Marco Rubio, are we better off with him? You know, that's all relative. If you're a Hispanic coming across the border and you've got Obama and DACA sitting next to you, and you've got Rubio and a higher fence or a longer way to go or more troops, then you're going to want Obama or a person like Obama.
Just don't cut through Arizona, because they're ruthless down there, no matter what color you are.
It doesn't matter. Arizona, New Mexico, Texas, California,
California's a little, they're a lot more liberal than Arizona. Arizona has Citizen Kanes out there with their weapons trying to take out Mexicans.
Well, all I know is that there's it's very, very difficult on an immigrant coming anywhere across the border in the nation, at least here in the West, and that includes California. If they catch you, they will prosecute, and potentially deport you. But
can I tell you guys a story quick when Don's done?
Go ahead.
Go for it.
Okay, I have a friend named Rafael Sanchez. He's on my Facebook. He came to this country from Mexico with his mother. I don't know all the reasons, but they lived in Santa Clarita, and she didn't allow him to go to school, or there were family problems with transportation or money or food. He never went to school from age 5 to 18. Well, then he started at the North Valley Occupation Center, where I worked in adult school in Mission Hills, and he got his high school diploma. He started reading high cerebral books of, you know, famous philosophers, historians, and culture, and he got accepted into Berkeley. And I think that's a pretty impressive story, don't you?
Very much.
So is Sanchez, he's not Chinese, right? He's actually...
No, he's Rafael Sanchez. He's a Mexican.
I know, I'm just playing with you. I think it's important that we live in a world with borders, but in heaven, the only border or separation will be between the righteous and the unrighteous. So I just think that if we keep the attitude that we're all in it together, and that no matter what country or where they're from, it's helping people succeed and being the best person they can be. The problem is we have people coming over here that are just trying to exploit what we have, and I guess we're exploiting them too. But they're not really concerned about the principles of our country. They're not concerned about a government or about making the world better. And part of it, they're just trying to survive. But the point is we're not getting the best recruits from across the border as compared to from, say, Korea or from China, people from rich families that are coming here to make a better life for themselves. So
that's where I disagree with value. You are getting fantastic value out of Hispanics, uneducated immigrants, in that they are going to take care of our base needs. Whereas the enlightening, if you will, needs that are taken care of by the new slaves, those from India and the Asian countries for internet purposes, careers, they are just adding a different type of value, but I don't think they're any more or less valuable.
I could take that.
Okay. Go ahead, finish what you were saying.
I do think, though, you know, if you have a gal pushing a baby cart and she's got three kids and she, you know, basically got pregnant in the United States so she could get free medical and have a kid be a citizen, they may not be thinking about graduating and going to college or making a better life. They're kind of looking for the quick, easy. I don't think that's true of everyone, but there is, I know if you go down to Elysian Park in downtown L.A., you see a lot of that going around. So hopefully.
Well, you're not, John, you're not extrapolating far enough. Now, those three babies that lady is pushing around in the cart conceivably could be your butler in the future, or someone who would help you out considerably, save your life, who knows what. They could be the Rafael Sanchez. Of the next generation that you would have as you get older, serve you or make you more comfortable in your days of need. Those are all things that can possibly happen from, you know, the Hispanic lady's three kids walking around Elysian Park, as opposed to a single, you know, Asian lady who never will have kids, and she is able to give her job 10 years of her life, and then she's disposable, or, you know, other things. Get deported,
yeah.
Her green card is expired, who knows what. But
right. Some of my experience, I guess, is based on kind of what I've encountered. So you're true. I'm sure there are other stories out there. Just the families I work with at our church, and they go to, you know, a church in Santa Monica. You got gals that are 21 years old living at home. You know, they're not pregnant with three kids, but they don't know how to drive, or they don't have their own check account. They're working on the 8-year graduate from college program, and the Catholic classes are like psychology or, you know, leather work or something like that. It's not practical to reality, and it's kind of a cultural thing. It's like, this isn't the first generation people. You know, this is like, you know, 2 to 3 generations in. It's like, are we learning anything as a culture? My peeps, you know, and that's kind of where I try to help and enlighten and at least bring them along as far as I can. But it's kind of hard to overcome that when I go home, and it's just being reinforced. Like, you don't really have to be motivated to succeed. So,
yeah,
you know,
John, you know the kid I'm flying out here in a couple of weeks?
Uh-huh.
He's he just turned 20, April 15th. He's the second oldest of 6 kids. He still lives at home. He doesn't work. He flunked the Army test twice. And the only place he can get a job is here, because I finagled my son's boss into giving him a job at McDonald's.
Wow.
He has a learning disability, because if you flunk the Army test, it means you're not the brightest bulb on the tree.
No. Anybody who takes the Army test does not have the brightest ball in the team.
You know what, Don? That test.
I
took that test in '86 when I was a Navy wife. It was easier than a 8th grade math test, or I guess you have to write an essay, and he's lousy at essays. But I mean, just think of yourself if either you guys were parents of a kid who didn't have high-functioning skills in the world, what would you do with them?
I certainly wouldn't send any kid to the military. I don't care what the situation is.
Well, here's something to consider. Sure, there are some kids that are a bit slow, but in general, most kids, say, take Hispanic, they speak fluent Spanish. And I test pretty well. You know, I always got A's and B's in school. I'd be in your upper 10 to 15% of the class. Some of the kids that were like the 4.0 people, I was quicker and brighter than some of them. But the point is, Spanish is hard for me, you know. And I read a lot, I study it a lot, and I still don't. I have very bad retention of it. The point is, you got a little 8-year-old kid speak fluent Spanish. He can learn whatever you teach him. So a lot of these things, we're just not teaching kids proper skills, work skills.
John,
learning
a language is a special gift. Most people either have it or they don't. It's kind of like learning math. You know, you either have it or you don't.
Well, I beg to disagree. It's like, how many people don't know, like, that are raised American, don't know how to speak English? How many people are raised Spanish, don't know how to speak Spanish or Chinese? I mean, yeah, there's some people that are not so good with it, but the point is, most people can speak fluently if you're raised with it. It's just, and you're talking 3 or 4 years of, or, you know, the first 6 years constant exposure to it, and around 8 or 9, you know, they're pretty much can carry conversation with anyone.
And there you go.
Yeah,
you
but when you're younger, you're more adaptable.
Question.
Go ahead.
But you still
John.
Learn. You can still learn with exposure. Anyone can pretty much go to any country. If they stay for 2 years, they'll come back relatively fluent with whatever language it is.
There you go. People don't have to be dumb for the rest of their life. You know what I mean? Some people are slow, but in general, I'm talking about 60-70% of people. You give them good work skills and good social interaction, and if they want to learn, they can do it.
Right.
Oshin Harasho, je suis fatigué, como estás, yo tocar el mercado. I just talked in 4 languages.
I know you did. I'm like, what the heck is she doing?
Russian, Spanish, and French. I spoke French in the 8th grade, Spanish in college, and I learned Russian in 2012, but I'm not good at it.
But can you speak jive? He speaks jive fluently.
Yeah. Can you speak
the only language I can't speak is love. I can't speak love.
Why not?
Because I'm
a
washed-up 54-year-old with no social or life skills.
Well, then how did you get hooked on this peace campaign?
I can speak love, but I can't make love.
No, that's not what you
just
said.
Just speak Britney, you know? Just put on one of her
speak
CDs.
Speak Britney.
Yeah.
Dress up or dress down, whatever the case may be, in one of her outfits, and you'll be fine.
The English people are one of the most stuffy people on earth.
Yes, that's because they have that British Anglican church that has made them, I don't even know what.
Well, I'm naturally stoic, and I'm naturally stoic because I'm Scandinavian. I'm very reserved with my feelings. Now, maybe
right,
you guys,
sure.
You haven't
that's
seen
why you
that
have this radio
of me.
Show. That's
By
why,
the way, guess who was at the Tony Awards tonight?
Tony?
thank you, because I'm like, who?
The Tony
Everybody
Awards
the Tony
is Broadway. Your
right.
buddy, Monica
Hugh
Lewinsky.
Monica
Lewinsky.
She's probably there for the new... She's probably the star of the show, The New Head. It features the... Anyway, go ahead. I was
they
doing
call
job,
her the next generation feminist.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like whatever they label, it's hard for other people to understand what the people in the business label because the labels don't always coincide with their other people's reality or their people's reality. You know, so I don't know what these labels are. It's kind of
she's
like
actually
all these
friends
sports.
She's friends with the co-host of the Tonys. Just let me briefly tell you. The only reason I brought it up is because, just let me say this, rising like a phoenix from the social ashes, Monica Lewinsky is back with an important message. Cyberbullying has to stop. The now infamous intern-turned-author is putting herself back in the spotlight that she has so stealthily avoided for the past 17 years on a mission to help the current and future generations. She talks people about...
She waited for the perfect time because, what, 10, 15 years ago, there wasn't all this social media. There wasn't the Facebook, the Twitter. People weren't walking around with their iPad talking to all their friends. So as far as for her, most of the people don't have as much of the negative taste. I'm talking about young kids. They don't even know who Monica Lewinsky is. They just know Clinton was the president. He had a little scandal thing. It's not like it was back then when everyone was like in an uproar and this is like, the moral indiscretion of a president publicly caught, like right in front of everyone. So I think she came out at a good time, actually.
Yeah, she did an article with Vanity Fair a year ago, and she said in the article, how public humiliation can be soul-destroying and is only enhanced by the rabid digital revolution. So, I don't know.
Good Lord.
I just think maybe she shouldn't show her face too much while Clinton's running.
Who has the blue dress and did it get dry cleaned? That's all I want to know.
The blue dress is hanging up in her closet still. I believe that she... sold it on Craigslist.
What?
Look that up, Jane. I thought I heard that she
sold it on Craigslist. John has to leave in 5 minutes. John, what's your final thought? And don't make it a blue dress joke.
Wow. Well, I would say follow the truth wherever it leads you. Unless it's at a voting booth in the in Florida on a split vote.
Oh. And they
Jesus Christ.
Oh, that's all he had to do was add that, and they canceled early voting. So that was the last day of voting.
Oh, by the way, Hillary was talking about early voting the other day.
Yeah, she's going to talk about everything that sounds good.
Are they
going
to count people votes? Are they going to count real people votes or mannequins and you know, deceased people? And,
well, both,
you know,
no, both parties want deceased people. They want to count. Both parties want to count those deceased people's votes.
Yes.
So
I can't find out what happened to the blue dress.
Okay.
Well, we need to find that.
I think they either auctioned it or auctioned it at Craigslist or one of those lists, or they actually auctioned it for some charity.
Monica Lewinsky offered $1 million for the infamous blue dress.
Right.
You know what she could do? She could work a deal with Tide or one of these you know, clothes cleaning companies and go, look, it gets the most stubborn stains out.
18-year-old thumb stain.
Yes.
Gosh. Can you get this out, Tide? Sure can.
Well, how about Hillary? She could come on and go, you know, sometimes, you know, it's hard to get stains out of certain clothes. You know, like, take this, you know, Bill, what's this? Oh.
Yeah,
by
no,
the way,
not...
she was only 22 when she started her affair, but someone had offered her $250,000 for the dress, and she turned it down. So I think eventually she sold it for $1 million.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, she could have,
okay.
Like... Did she sell it for $1 million?
It doesn't say exactly in the It doesn't say exactly in the article.
Okay.
Okay, I hate to tell you, I can't find. I'm not going to dig around my internet sources for this type of information. All I know is that I'm planning to sleep with somebody famous and sell my dress for $1 million.
Oh.
Wow.
Okay. I'm not going to ask who. But just remember that Hillary probably has some, possibly has some Lewinsky stains on her dress too. So don't get it twisted.
Exactly. What are you saying? They had a threesome?
Well,
foursome, fivesome, sixsome, just gangbang orgy. I don't know what it was. They're not the cleanest people in the White House. And that's, you know, that's just going on information collectively that kind of circumstantially implicates them in a lot of different sexual situations together. And that would include being on the plane, airplanes with other people, doing things to Bill or whatever, or going on an island where, you know, kiddie porn people frolic. You know, you don't know what they do together or apart. And so, you know, this is something that...
You mentioned that island another time, and it's starting to disturb me.
Don't be disturbed.
Oh,
the people of power do that all the time. The answer to your question at the outset is no. There is going to be no one who is going to be able to change the ways of nature in man. This is it's not possible. And
Go ahead.
What John was saying earlier about having to have a portion of the enslaved is true. You know, taken advantage of, that's something that people are used to, ingrained in their instincts, in their unconscious, in their id. And so they
I have a question
choice.
For you guys. If if this girl was a 22-year-old intern from like Birmingham, Alabama, instead of Beverly Hills, California, do you think it would have been such a big deal?
John?
Well, she was smart enough to keep the dress, and I think she did talk to some people and got some advice on what to do. So she played her cards right. You know, I think she underestimated what would happen. I mean, young gals fall in love. I mean, Clinton's charismatic. President of the freaking United States of America. You know, she probably had a super crush on him, and because she knew, you know, that he's married, so it was going to obviously be a problem. But young girls don't think that way. They just get out of control. And but
in the Oval Office, in the Oval Office, oh my God.
Oh, yeah.
You know what? The reason she was caught, John, is because Linda Tripp spilled the beans. And someone
else.
Right.
Yeah, Monica Lewinsky confided into Linda Tripp, and Linda Tripp was a high-ranking government official, and she spilled the beans. So that's how it went down.
Right.
Now,
right.
That's a little suspect in a way because, you know, think about it. You've got a big problem, right? You screw up. Your son has a big problem. Who does he talk to? You, maybe his best friend. Would he talk to like the president of, you know, the principal at school, the mayor, some government official? I mean, you're crazy for a bruising. Right?
Linda Tripp tricked her into. She was needling her for information after Lewinsky acted gushy about the relationship.
Right. So here again, I mean, part of that's inexperience, but the fact of the matter is she was kind of playing her cards. She was didn't know what to do, and she's kind of figuring out, do I make money? Do I keep my mouth shut? Do I leverage this? Do I try to get out quietly? I'm sure if there was no negative repercussions, if Bill Clinton was a single man as a president, I think the dynamic would have been totally different. But because he's married, she's would be considered a homewrecker and you know a fornicator and you know this terrible person. But I think if he was single, I think she would have rolled with it. I think she would have been.
John,
you know,
by the way, your phone's getting fishy. Now, it's getting underwater sounding. You can stay or go. I just want to bring up another topic. Dennis Hastert, the one who was taking out two biggest sums out of his bank, was actually running a cover-up scam for when he was a coach in the 1960s and 70s in Illinois, in Yorkville, Illinois. He molested like two or three boys, and the statute of limitations for prosecution are far gone. But he was federally indicted for the method in which he removed money from the bank.
Did you say indicted?
Indicted.
Indicted. Sorry.
Okay.
She might have said indicted. But
yeah.
That's what he was doing to that poor kid who died of AIDS.
Yes.
Did he die of AIDS?
Yeah. He died a couple of years ago of AIDS.
That's sad. I wonder if he turned gay after he got porked by Hastert.
That would be a yes.
Well, that's a terrible thing. What was this man doing? And why do we have so many corrupt officials? That dude in Florida a few years ago, that congressman got thrown out for messing with the page boy. And then they had to end the whole paging system in Washington over one person's mistake.
Because it wasn't just one person's mistake. It's an epidemic. You've got to understand that, Jane. When you go to Washington, when you go to any legislative situation for any length of time, you have time on your hands. There are things that are normal: cocktail parties, barbecues, going out to dinner every night. You're rubbing elbows with everyone who's there in your sphere.
And rubbing more than elbows, by the way. I think you're going to
do the whole point.
Poor Jane.
I was on the hill one. I was on the congressional hill one. I was on the hill one time at Charnice Ransom. I went to North Carolina Central, and I went to visit Charnice Ransom. She was a worked for a North Carolina congressman, and I got to go to an armed services party. And apparently I got drunk and I started dissing the military, and she said I made an ass out of myself.
At least you were left with your clothes on.
Yeah, I was 22 years old, just like Monica.
At least you left with your clothes on. You know,
I had no idea how to play my cards.
That's all right. Rape in the military is, again, epidemic. These guys on guys and girls on girls and girls on guys and guys. You know, this is in the military. Again, they have a lot of time on their hands. And that's what the problem is with a lot of the American framework, is that people aren't doing their jobs anymore. They've got either the money on the brain or something, sex on the brain. But they're not taking care of their kids, their finances, the earth. They're not doing anything right now. They're getting lazy. And again, I go to nutrition. Well, we are what we eat. And we're putting so many things, poisons, toxins in our body that are unnatural. Our body doesn't have an opportunity to work.
Yeah, John and I covered on a Wednesday night on a midnight show, we covered the Invisible War. It featured five women who had been raped in the military and how their lives unraveled. So John and I did cover that topic already.
Well,
I was going to say part of it is also a product just of the computers and with the internet. It's a different culture. I mean, when I was growing up, you might see you wouldn't see an R-rated movie on TV. It'd be edited to be like PG-13. And, you know, maybe you might find someone's hidden stash of Playboy, and they weren't allowed to show genital areas. But now you're talking a time, kid gets online, internet, and they're checking everything out. There's so much exposure. I mean, just a Carl's commercial is just about, you know, as close to pornography as you can get, you know. And it's common in the living room. I mean, you're bombarded with the stuff. So the imagery, it does have an effect, I think, over time. And we're going to pay the consequence of it. We already are.
May I ask you guys a question? Because we've already been talking. It's been an hour. And if we're not going to end the show now, I want to go to a music commercial. Does anyone have a problem with that? Or should we just wrap the show up?
I'm jumping off ship right now anyway, so it's a good segue for me.
Okay, Don and I will do the conclusion. How do you feel about that, Don?
Oh, that's fine. No problem. Good luck to you, John.
Yeah, it's a little delayed birthday celebration with some friends just because I'm working two jobs, so it's hard for them to connect with me schedule-wise, so it's kind of a delay. They want to take me out. It's a good thing.
Cool. Well, good luck. Have fun.
All right.
So, Don,
see you,
I don't...
I'm off.
Thank you, John. Thank you.
I'll see you later. Bye.
Good night.
All right, bye.
Don, I guess the main premise of the show was a little lofty and idealistic, but I do have some hope for this country based on the fact that, you know, there's a lot of candidates throwing in their hat, and some of them are putting in their own income, and they're not even well known. They're probably going to fall out by January. But the fact of the matter is that people are still trying, and you know, even though we mentioned some corruption throughout Congress and the presidency, I don't have all night. I've done several papers on the executive branch troubles, including Nixon's whole era. But do you have any final thoughts tonight? Because I don't really want to stay on the air for more than 10 minutes.
That's fine. No problem. I am very, I have been very cognizant of the eras that we've gone through with our presidency, executive board, and the executive branches. And right now we're getting ready to change into a time where we're going to run out of, be out of control. We don't have the, like you said earlier, the capability of organizing and unifying our many organizations, branches, everything that's involved. You see where the federal government workers, 4 million of them have had their data compromised. That is extreme.
Are you talking about the IRS?
No, I'm talking about the hacking purportedly by the Chinese. I don't know if they did it actually, but where they have gotten into the federal government employee database and extracted information, social, from 4 million up to 4 million or over 4 million federal workers. And yeah, I'm surprised you haven't heard about that, but that is
I just heard about there was a glitch in the IRS system, and they were somehow someone hacked into that. I believe it was customers though, and that the they had to upgrade their systems and their, you know, their not just technology, but the way their systems are set up.
Right. Well, that's a separate hacking. What I'm looking at is the fact that 4 million federal government workers, employees, have apparently had their information hacked, probably, and they say probably by the Chinese, but I don't think it's necessarily them.
All right, let's say someone does hack our information. How do you set up a bank account without an ID? I mean, you can set up bank accounts online, but without necessarily an ID, but are these people manufacturing all fake IDs or what?
Yes. I mean, in many cases, if they're Russian or Chinese or whatever the case may be, French, they have an opportunity to buy, just like any other undocumented, that they can buy identification. The frequent use of dead person's social security number, other babies who they're claiming are older or whatever the case may be. You know, we're talking about this, an incredible array of possibilities for procuring new identities.
Yeah, I know Mexicans firsthand who bought dead people's social security numbers.
Right. So this is commonplace. You know, and that's what your listeners have to understand, that these things that the leaders perpetrate on a community have been lifelong or historically long occurrences. This is the first era or time in history that these improprieties of money stealing and greed have gone on. So this is just a new
it's just
era.
It's a common hazard of the tech age. Now, I did want to throw one thing across you. Basically, oh, God. No, I lost my train of thought. I did, so I can't ask you.
That's all right. Bottom line is that, you know, we're trying. There are enough people who are trying their best to maintain some kind of status quo that we're going to. There's going to be a fight. It could conceivably turn into a civil war. And, we're looking at the militia against the citizenry, and that's going to be really
well.
An
I
ugly
do have
type.
Good news. I had to. I remember what I was going to say. I had to recently enroll in Obamacare because I now make over $3,000 a month, and I effectively enrolled. It was only about a 3-page application, luckily, through Minsure. It's a Minnesota-based Obamacare, and I am only charged $50 a month.
Right.
Now, if I made over $35,000 to $40,000, like this lady in my support group, I think she missed the cutoff. Her billing was, I think she made around $40,000 to $45,000. She would have been charged $300 a month. And I guess, I don't want to say this on the air, but last year I made $41,000, but I looked at the figures all across for like earned income credit and purchasing medical care. By making that extra $9,000 or $10,000 last year, I really hurt myself. I outsourced myself out of a tax bracket, out of an earned income credit, and I could have done major damage to my medical care. So this year I am only planning on making $35,000 because it's ended up hurting me.
Okay. Now that's possible. And there is talk that Obamacare could go higher, even another, I believe it was 8% to 12%.
Really?
No, it's 12% to 16%. I'm sorry. So it can the rates can go up again. He's not having the enrollment of the young people that he expected, and we've got more, I believe, more applicants than he expected. So you know, there are a lot of people. You're in a better spot than those people who already have it, because a lot of those folks are losing it illegally. There are glitches in the system that are really hurting people who already are Obamacare customers. And those clients, it has to do with the data processing and all. There are all kinds of problems. And those people who have it already are getting cut off.
Wow.
They're being cut off the roll. So you're in a lucky place in that you're not starting until now, where they don't have that same glitch. You're a new enrollee.
What happened was is I'm in the middle of a enrollment year. For example, it's closed. In Minnesota, it closed on April 30th because the window was left open till people paid their taxes.
The reason I
was able to enroll after the deadline is because my income went up and I had my renewal date for my health insurance, which was paid for by the county. And my renewal date was around June 15th. I think it was June 8th, but they told me by May 31st I was getting cut off. So Minnesota has a good system. We only have 4 to 5 million people in the state, and I don't have to be worried about being overrun by long waiting calls on the phone and that kind of stuff.
Right. And that's why I say you're getting in a good spot, because for the most part, there are the glitches are being smoothed out, if you will, with the new enrollees as opposed to those who were early applicants who have now.
Yeah, I remember hearing the NPR stories on the. I remember hearing the stories on the news. I'll just use Minnesota. A lot of states had glitches. Some people had problems where they were halfway applied and then they couldn't advance to the next screen. There was all kind of they've already replaced the Minnesota director of Minsure 3 times. So many states had problems, and you're right. It's not in the infant stages anymore. It's established now, and there's a lot less problems.
Right, but the problems that are there are magnified. In all essence, when it came down to it, there were extensions that were allowed for the initial enrollment periods. Ultimately, they came late in the game, but there were extensions that were offered. And now those extensions are played out, and everything that a person does is subject to what rules and regulations at that moment. And they are very stringent. That's the thing I don't like. I don't like that. Some of the rules are very stringent. But the other thing is I don't like IRS as the principal financial overseer. That
right,
is,
because
that is not
H&R,
the job.
Which it follows out into other problems, too, like H&R Block and Jefferson Taxes and all those major tax firms. I mean, Jackson Hewitt. They have to integrate their tutoring of their new employees with all those Obamacare rules. And half of
absolutely.
The H&R Block, yeah, half of the H&R Block employees aren't even competent enough to do the basic questions because they're just, all they do is follow a computer guide, and when the computer guide doesn't give them the right answer, they don't have any base knowledge. So...
exactly.
Well, with that, I'll say my final thoughts, then you can say yours. My final thoughts is that we're still going to the Britney concert September 9th, and I'm still working on that. And my second final thought is that I really I started the
that's
show
you and me. That's you and me, right?
And John.
And John, okay, that's fine. No worries.
I started the show tonight in a vein of, you know, I wasn't prepared for another presidential year. Thank God it's 2015 and not 2016. I don't like the talking heads on CNN who try to predict, oh, Hillary's only has a 41% approval rating in the polls this week, and she's behind in six different categories, and she's the highest in 54 and the lowest is 41. Like, you know, if they're going to do this football-style statistic thing for the next 16 months, it's going to really irk me. Because Jesse Ventura was voted governor of Minnesota in a surprise upset by the farmers of Minnesota. He wasn't even on the radar for winning the day before the election. And obviously our presidential campaign's a little more steady and predictable, but the fact of the matter is we have to leave some room for the unknown, because let's see democracy play itself out and make villains of heroes and heroes of villains, and let's give people like Lindsey Graham a chance. Lindsey Graham has a good head on his shoulders, and I'm not going to limit myself to one party this year, and that's about all I have to say.
Well, okay, that's pretty well said until you went to Lindsey Graham. But anyway, I could almost be Chris Christie, but no, you went to Lindsey Graham. That was a little much. But no, my final thoughts is that with the advent of all the Common Core legislation that's coming through in our educational system, I know Nevada just affirm most of the Common Core tenets principles in this last legislative session. We're talking about the loss of freedom, the oligarchical implementation of communism, and the loss of minority and positive interaction in societies. We're going to really be under the auspices of one central educational system, and I can't foresee anything good coming of it. It's only going to hold our minority students back. It's already, they lied to the public. Initially, they did say that there were going to be 2/3 of the students flunking, and then they said no, no, no for the longest time, and now it's confirmed that with our new read by third grade, they're going to hold back two-thirds of the students. So we've just voted in to destroy our minority populations.
Yeah, you know, did you know the status quo, Don, in Minnesota and California is the last 10 years is they don't hold kids back, even if they're failing? Without a doubt, that's what happens. Well, we just lost Don. I think his phone went off. It got cut off. So with that, I just wanted to reiterate the last fact that my son is an 11th grader. Even if the kid is failing up to three classes, they do not hold children back in Minnesota and California public schools. But then it becomes a problem by their junior year if they're failing a class because they cannot be, they have to make up any class that they fail in 10th, 11th, and 12th. Also 9th grade too. So with that, I'll thank you for joining us. Be safe. Love your country, but love your values and belief systems first. Thank you and good night.